You're listening to the NetMums podcast with me, Wendy Gollidge.
And me, Alison Perry. Coming up on this week's show...
Just when you think you're having a hard time, you'll get given it back, I'm sure, in other areas. So that's what I think was my little blessing to come, was that we haven't had the terrible twos.
But before all of that... Hello, hello, welcome back to another podcast. I have... something I need to ask you all. I am feeling really old because this week I started watching The Hunger Games with my 11-year-old, and it's that really weird thing of watching something I spent my misspent 20s watching with my kids. Alison, tell me, as a teenage mother, are you doing the same?
I am. My 12-year-old and I, this week, we've been watching the Twilight films, and it is kind of weird. I'm so
with you.
There's
quite a lot of sexy time in the Twilight films.
It's all just kissing. There's a lot of intense emotions, which is kind of quite weird, but it's all very safe and fine for 12-year-olds.
Well, our guest today has younger children than us, so she is at the coalface of toddlerhood and reception, which is a whole different ballgame, and you're also at that coalface, Alison. So, you know, we can talk to her about that. Would you like to give us the big shiny intro, please?
Yes, today we are so excited to say that we have a member of one of the biggest girl bands of the last 20 years. In fact, she is an OG member of the Sugar Babes. They first hit the top 10 in the year 2000 with their debut single Overload. And since then, Siobhan Donaghy has left the group and then reunited with the original members to record more music. Sugar Babes' latest album, The Lost Tapes, hit number 2 in the UK download charts when it was released recently. And they've got festival dates and gigs coming up later this year. Welcome, Siobhan Donaghy.
Hello. How are you doing? That was such a lovely intro. Thank you.
How are you doing?
I'm really good. We're coming to the end of the school holidays. Looking forward to having a minute to myself in a couple of days' time. But other than that, very well. How are you guys?
Much the same. Ladies and gentlemen, today is the first day my children went back after the Easter holidays. I love them dearly, and I loved walking away from the school gates this morning with a friendly wave and 6 whole hours to do what I want.
My youngest 2 are 4, and they're on an inset day today, which is like the dreaded thing where you think that they're going back to school, but no, one more day, a bonus day.
Oh, I thought mine were going back on Thursday, and I now realise it's Wednesday. So although I've still got another 2 days, that feels like a bonus in itself, just to bring it forward one day.
I was actually speaking to one of our previous podcast guests this morning, a lady called Annie Price, and she did that thing where she was sat at the school gates and it was an inset day.
Oh, no. It's the worst, isn't it?
No. So Siobhan, take us way, way, well, that's a bit rude. Not way, way back, just a little bit back to when you were 13.
That is way back, don't we?
I didn't want to be rude. And you were signed to a record company. That's bloody young to be like in the spotlight. How was it?
I met my manager when I was 12, and we were 13 when we got together as a band. So my manager was also managing Mutia as a solo artist, and we really wanted to work together. So we did a studio session together, and on the second day, Mutia brought her friend Keisha from school, who also liked to sing. We sang together. All of a sudden, we were a girl band. You know, you're at an age where a lot of people say that, you know, they've always wanted to sing and always wanted to be in music. As much as I always loved singing and music, I had no confidence, and I couldn't think of anything worse than getting up in front of people and singing. But, you know, you're at an age where you don't know what you want to do with, you know, with your life and as a career. So I kind of just went along with it. But now, being a mother myself, I can't imagine what that was like for my parents, because it's, you know, they were our legal guardians and had to come everywhere with us. So as well as holding down jobs and taking their 3 children here, there and everywhere, you know, my mum also had to sit through like all night studio sessions. So it was bizarre. I used to have a lot of FOMO with my friends that I was missing out, but I quite enjoy now that it was the school of life that I went to.
You're right, that must have been strange for your parents. And now that you're a parent now, looking back on that, what kind of advice did they give you? Can you remember the kind of things that your mum said to you at the time?
So So I'm the youngest of three girls, and me and my two sisters, even now, with every year that goes by, we get more and more baffled about how relaxed our parents were. Like, they never asked us to do our homework. We had to be self-motivated in everything, which is great, right? And that's not to say they didn't care, because they totally did. But they had this stance about us just wanting to be happy. And so they didn't really have any guidance around, you know, like, they never spoke to us about, you know, the fact that they would like us to go to university, because they didn't themselves. And although they would totally want us to reach our potential, they were just very laid back about everything. And I hope me and my two sisters don't go the other way and become, you know, that's what they say, that's what happens, don't they? That I'll now become like some helicopter parent and really push my kids for like academic excellence or something.
We as a generation are accused in the press and quite heavily labelled as overparenting and overprotecting. And my parents were very much the same as yours. If I didn't do my homework, it wasn't their problem, it was my problem. And if I didn't get things in on time, or, you know, they were very much just a case of, okay, carry on. And I find it really hard to do with my kids already. And it's like, it sounds like you've had the same experience. How are you going to not do it with your kids?
I think I'm already that parent that is, you know, I worry about everything. How do you stop yourself from worrying? I don't know. I'm trying with my son, you know, obviously he's only in reception. I don't have to worry about any of these things really at the moment. Like, the only thing I'm worried about at the moment is like, is he happy? Like, and does he like learning? I just want him to really enjoy school, because I loved school. My favourite subject was maths. I think out of all three of us, me and my two sisters, I think the assumption would have been that I would have been the academic one. But I mean, that didn't work. That didn't quite work out. But I did really enjoy school. So that's all that is, you know, for now, that's all I really want for the children, is that they enjoy it.
Something that gets talked about a lot these days, but wasn't back then, is like mental health of children. And it's been reported that your career took its toll on your mental health back then. But that must have been a really hard thing to go through, considering it wasn't something that was discussed that much.
I sometimes wonder, like, would I have been the same had I not got into the music industry so young? Like, I don't know what the triggers were for setting off what has been really a lifelong battle with anxiety and then the odd time depression. Like, I definitely suffered with depression as a teenager. And then I had a little bout of postnatal depression with my second, with Vivian. But generally, anxiety is something that just sort of follows me around, you know, always. But then, like, you know, when you know, we're just much more open about speaking about it now. And I think we have, you know, that's much healthier. So I think, you know, perhaps, you know, past generations really did just bottle it up and it came out in other kind of negative, you know, ways. You know, I can't imagine what I would be pushed to if I couldn't talk about it. You know, there's lots of new terminologies now for, you know, I would never have even said, you know, anxiety. I wouldn't have known what I was experiencing, other than that I always felt a little bit, I was just always, you know, quite nervous about everything.
But it's that terminology is so interesting, because I remember, like, when we were growing up, people would say, oh, well, she's living on her nerves and that kind of thing. Do you remember that kind of terminology? And actually, what they mean is this person's having a hard time with anxiety at the moment. So now, with this mindset and with this knowledge, what would you tell teenage Siobhan in the Sugar Babes, like, when she was struggling? What if you could tell her one thing, what would it be?
I think I would tell myself that none of it matters all that much. I think everyone, especially as a teenager, you think people are looking at you, you know, as intensely and as in much detail as you would look at yourself. But really, no one has time to worry about anyone else. They're too busy worrying about themselves. And, you know, I didn't want to put a foot wrong. I didn't want to sing a wrong note. And I mean, honestly, who cares? You know, this past year that we've been back on stage with the Sugar Babes, I've had the best time, you know, and I get up there and I dance like I'm out on a Saturday night with my girlfriends. And it's like, I don't care who's watching, because I don't know what has happened to me since becoming a mum, but, you know, I don't get to go out all that often. And I just think, you know, we just got to enjoy it. And I love my job now more, like, way more than ever before. So yeah, just to try and not take things quite as seriously as I did back then.
It must have been so hard as well to have been going through all of that, but also dealing with like the press attention that you guys had, because, you know, back in the early noughties, it felt like, you know, the boy bands and the girl bands and the pop stars were never off the front pages. And it was reported a lot about, you know, how well you and your bandmates got on or didn't get on. But I'm guessing that you are firm friends since you are here over 20 years later working together.
Things were definitely different back then. We definitely had our difficulties. I think that, you know, the three of us being quite as young as we were, trying to navigate our way through a very adult world, a very male-dominated world, let's be honest, it kind of still is. You know, we probably turned a lot of that those nerves and worries kind of on each other. Or if one of us was a bit quiet, we'd think, you know, oh, they're moody and they're annoyed with me. You know, because that's just what you worry about, you know, in your teenage years. You know, and that just doesn't exist anymore. There's just this given, right, that we're like, we're sisters, we've worked together forever, we absolutely know we've got each other's backs. Therefore, if someone's not having a great day, instead of thinking, what's their problem with me, it's more about looking at them going, what can I do to help? And so, yeah, we've just got a really lovely relationship. It's very nice.
And now that you're back in the limelight, as it were, how do you think that's affecting the kind of mum you are? You keep your kids super private, but do you think it's affecting how you parent? Is it changing the sort of mum you are or influencing it?
I think it's making me a better mum because, and this sounds awful, but I do like going out to work.
That doesn't sound awful.
I hear you.
I'm here for the majority, but when I go through long periods of being a stay-at-home mum, it is the hardest job. And, you know, I do get frustrated with them. And, you know, I have to acknowledge that I do need some adult time and some, you know, brain stimulation from my peers. You know, it goes a long way. And then I just think I'm happier and like way more full of energy and actually have more energy to go and do things with them than when I am with them all the time. And I also think they appreciate me more. They see my husband go out to work, and, you know, I definitely felt for a while that you know, it was just natural that they took me for granted and I was sort of, you know, the punching bag at home. But, you know, yet they're so excited to see daddy when he comes home. And now we've got a bit more of a balance, you know, and I've had to push some of the mother load over to my husband. He's wonderful, but, you know, even the best ones,
they're still not mummy.
No, you know, I think our brains do work in different ways, and, you know, I appreciate that comes off like I'm totally stereotyping, which I guess in a way I am, but in our household that is how it is. And I do, you know, that it is, I find it a lot, you know, like to suddenly flip between home life with everything that goes with that, booking the holidays, ordering, the next size up in the school uniform, and, you know, what are they doing next Wednesday? And, you know what it's like, it's everything. I can't even think on the top of my head what any of those things are. And then suddenly, you know, I have to sit down in the studio and write a song, and, you know, your brain could just combust some days. So yeah. I am trying, we're trying to get a better balance at home.
It's the mental load, isn't it? It's like, even if you have got a really good balance between the two parents at home, usually, and I am, and again, I'm talking broadly, probably stereotyping here, but you do find that it's the mum that carries the mental load, that you're the one thinking about the school uniform and
shit, I haven't got a party present for that party on Thursday, and oh my god, who's picking up from ballet tonight?
My husband took my son to a birthday party and then messaged me going, oh, I didn't bring a birthday present. You couldn't just pop out, could you? And get a birthday present. Oh. So the whole time they were at the party, I then went out, got the present, wrapped the present, drove it down to them. I was like, come on now. But, you know, it takes a bit of practice, doesn't it, I guess, with the handing over. But it's nice as well, because I think, well, especially at the moment, and I don't think it'll be for much longer with my boy, I'm definitely the favourite. So I'll take that. it's very much mum is the favourite at the moment. So I quite like it when it's that way around.
How do you guys split your parenting duties then? It sounds like you've got things pretty well worked out, even if the birthday present buying does go awry sometimes.
Well, I moved house a year ago to be closer to my family, to be closer to the village, because I didn't have one where I was. So we survived, well, barely survived my son's first 4 years without having family close by, and in the end we just caved and we've moved out. And so I've got my family very close to us within like 20 minutes. So they help a lot. My husband is full time. He's never been able to work at home, pretty much not really even through the pandemic. And so, yeah, I mean, do we have a good balance? Because really what we do at the moment, I work a lot over the summer holidays, right? Because it's the festival season. But often it's like Thursday, Friday onwards. So Chris at the moment uses his holiday days to cover me. So I don't know how sustainable that is moving forwards, but that is our option at the moment. Because I know anyone out there, like if they've ever tried to get ad hoc childcare, I swear it doesn't exist. I mean, I keep trying,
it
and then I find
exist.
Someone. It doesn't, does it? It's really difficult. It'd be much easier if I just had like a real, much more structured thing happening, you know, on the same days every week, but I don't. And so we just kind of, yeah, we make it work somehow, you know.
And you very deliberately kept your kids out of the limelight. Was that something you decided as a couple right from the beginning you wanted to do, or has it just kind of happened organically?
I became a bit nervous about how judgmental people are on Instagram about the way people look. Like, I mean, I think my kids are just so gorgeous, but I don't really want people nitpicking at my kids, and or even just being like they're gorgeous, you know, because they are, you know, the sum of who they are is much bigger than that. And then I worried about putting across, you know, just like the loveliest pictures of us having a nice time, and it just not being, you know, a true representation of any given day in any given week. Because, you know, we rarely go through a day, you know, when your kids are really little, I'm yet to do the later years, but you rarely have a day where there's not something like frustrating or hard that you're negotiating. And so I felt like I had to make a call, like it's either warts and all, I'm putting everything out there so that I was being honest about my experience, or not at all. And I kind of felt like I didn't have the time or the brain power to do that. And so this is probably one of the first times I'll be talking about, you know, I mean, me as a parent publicly. I did one podcast previously where we touched on it for sure, but I've never really talked much about my experience. I mean, you know, both my children, I started trying for children when I was 30. I ended up having IVF for both my children, so I had some help along the way. And I think that by the time I was pregnant with Ford, you know, I already felt like I'd been through the mill. And then I had a difficult birth, as lots of people do. And you know, you end up just kind of being on this train that you can't get off. And I don't really feel like I've ever been able to stop. And, you know, other than taking pictures at home, I haven't been able to document it very well along the way. I haven't had the headspace to explain how I felt a lot of the time. And I think that's probably the same for a lot of people in those early years. You're so in it. I wouldn't even know where to begin to put my life on Instagram, that part of my life, you know. I think it would look quite messy.
But then I think a lot of people can relate to that. I think what you've just described, like, you know, age 30, wanting to start a family, and then actually finding it's not just as easy as, you know, trying a few times, a few months, and then, oh, I'm pregnant. It can turn into this huge, big, all-consuming life project, I guess. You know, it's...
Yeah, I mean, it was for us. We had a really positive experience. We went to Zeta West.
Oh, yeah.
In Marylebone, and it was just a really lovely, like small, like family orientated clinic. They really took care of us. You know, we had a bit of a false start, and then it worked, but it worked, you know, pretty quickly for us. We were lucky. I definitely didn't have a straightforward pregnancy with Ford, and that probably wasn't great for my anxiety either.
Not straightforward in what way? As in you were ill, or he
worrying for him or just you being ill?
I had quite a big hematoma for about the first 4 or 5 months. So I bled quite a lot. It's essentially what that means. It's like a sack of blood that is outside the pregnancy, but it's completely potluck as to whether it will get smaller and disappear or whether it will get bigger and consume the pregnancy. So that was a worry.
God, you had a really rough time. Like, your baptism into pregnancy and birth was pretty hardcore.
Yeah, and it wasn't the best birth either. Actually, I thought it was amazing. I think by the end I was hallucinating. I was so tired, but it was an incredible experience. But I don't think it wasn't a straightforward delivery. And subsequently, I had a C-section with my daughter. That was what was recommended for me.
And how did you find that?
Do you know what? I really love that I've tried both. I think, if I'd have been able to have like a home birth or a water birth and like a completely unassisted birth, I'm sure I would have favoured that over the two options I ended up with. Because Ford was a four-step delivery, like no one wants that. and then with Vivian, a planned C-section is really, like, really quite calm. I quite enjoyed it. But then my face went numb on one side and they had to get some medication for me. They're worried about my blood pressure and stuff. So but after that, I was like, I'm really lucky. I've got two lovely, healthy children and the shop is shut.
It's funny, isn't it? Because I had two cesareans, one planned, one not. And
oh, gosh.
I don't think we've ever interviewed a woman on this podcast for whom the journey from conceiving a baby to holding a baby in their arms has been the way they expected it to be. And that's really telling that none of us, either it's telling about what we have in our heads as young women about what pregnancy and birth is like. I think there's probably that over the experience, because nobody ever says, oh yeah, well, I got pregnant, I had a baby, it all went marvellously. Nobody.
I'm always suspicious when people do say that. I'm like, really?
Are you lying?
I've definitely got a couple of friends who just had a really, and actually my eldest sister, she said that she enjoyed the birth so much that she would like to have done it the following day. I've never forgotten that she said that. And both her and my mother told me and my other sister that it would just be, you know, bad period pain and, you know, it's fine.
Bad period pain.
And afterwards, I was really cross because I thought maybe they had just fibbed to us because they, you know, don't want to scare people. But no, they really did just have a really positive experience. So I've really tried quite hard not to feel hard done by it, because I just didn't have that wonderful, rosy, you know, experience.
No, I'm with you there.
It felt a bit more
hard done by. It's very hard not to feel sad if you haven't had the experience you wanted to have, I think.
I'm just so overwhelmingly grateful that the science was out there to give me my two children that I just, you know, I count my blessings and I move on. I mean, I do think my physical recovery from both of them was really long. Honestly, I would say 2 years for both of them to feel, you know, just completely normal again, you know, but now I feel like I'm out of the woods.
You said that you suffered from PND as well. That must have been hard on top of the physical recovery as well.
So with Vivian, I kind of felt like the minute I got pregnant, I got a little bit down in the dumps. I don't know what happened. It's obviously a hormonal thing. It's really weird because my overwhelming symptom of pregnancy with Ford is that I laughed a lot.
That's a brilliant symptom.
It was my only symptom. And sometimes I'd be out with friends and, you know, they'd laugh, I'd laugh, but then my laugh would keep going, which everyone found really funny for a while. And after a few minutes, I'd have to excuse myself and go and continue laughing in the ladies' room. And I would literally have to think like dead rabbits, because I look like a nutcase. And
I've never heard that.
No, I haven't. I've never heard this. And I was about 8 months pregnant and I was driving and I had to pull the car over because I thought, I'm going to crash the car. I could not stop laughing. So for me then to have got pregnant with my daughter And to swing completely the other way, I was like, for crying out loud, when is this journey going to become a little bit more predictable or straightforward?
But that kind of makes a bit of sense, doesn't it? If your hormones can make you unhappy and low, then of course, why shouldn't they make you feel the opposite? It is that kind of, you know, highs and lows.
Yeah, I mean, I still enjoyed both pregnancies. I think if I could be pregnant forever, honestly, I would. I just loved it.
Oh God, I vomited out of my nose every day for 9 months. I did not love it. No. I got to the point where I could actually decide. I had to decide what I was going to have for dinner and which ones I preferred bringing back up. It was that good.
Oh my God! I had one day of sickness with Ford.
One day. I know.
I'm so sorry. Sorry,
because you were laughing so much.
Yes, too busy laughing. But I would say I remember at the time thinking, my God, I could not do this every day. So yeah, I've actually got a cousin who's pregnant at the moment, and she says she just stopped feeling sick every day, and she's like 4.5 months pregnant. I'm like, God love you.
So how did you get out of that period of feeling low after Vivian was born? Did you speak to someone? What did you do to kind of help yourself to recover?
So it was completely different postpartum experience because we were in lockdown when I had Vivian. So that was quite a hardcore lockdown. Everyone was working from home. So my husband was at home. So as much as he was working downstairs, He was there with me, and that really was a game changer. Also, I did qualify to have someone come and help me because I had a baby under the age of one. So I had, God, I just completely forgot this until I started talking about it. I had a postnatal doula with Vivian, and she would come in and cook for me and, you know, hold Vivian if I needed, you know, if I wanted to go and have a shower or something. It really was life-changing, and I think, you know, I definitely looked much more into that kind of 40-day confinement and things like that from other cultures for Vivian, because I didn't do that with Ford. I did the absolute opposite. I carried on working until he was nearly 6 months old and nearly killed myself doing it. And I think as a result, both me and Ford probably really suffered because he was tongue-tied when he was born. So I struggled to breastfeed with him. In the end, I ended up combi feeding until he was 6 months old. But it just became really confusing. I couldn't work out why he was such an unsettled baby and he just never slept. And it turned out he had cow's milk protein allergy, and it was just really late diagnosed in him. And so for Vivian, I was like, right, I owe it to this child and to myself to just be, you know, in the room, you know, get everything off to a good start. So I made my diet, you know, 100% dairy free before she came along, and we just had a completely different experience. It was clear that she had the same thing with the dairy allergy, but we were getting ahead of it in making sure, you know, the breastfeeding worked for her.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because even the difference between my first child and my second child, the conversation around pulling up the drawbridge, giving yourself that kind of fourth trimester where you listen to what your baby is trying to tell you, you listen to what your body's trying to tell you, had changed. And there was only 4 years, but it was the difference between 2011 and 2015. And now in 2023, that conversation has moved on so much more again that people are, I hope that mums are more aware that you're not just expected to be parading your newborn around Sainsbury's 3 days after you've given birth. You should be in bed. You should be learning about them. And it's really lovely to hear you say that you did that second time round.
I do try, and I hope I don't scare my friends now when they're having children, but I do, I buy them. I'm trying to remember the name of the book. It's called like The First 40 Days. I think it's an American Korean woman that wrote it. So I buy that for my friends now and just tell them to take that really seriously, because you know what, some of them, you know, I speak to them, a few weeks in, or like more like a couple of months in, to see, you know, how are they getting on and stuff, and you know, you're expecting, I'm expecting them to have had the same experience as me, you know, this colicky baby, and there's like nothing you can do but, you know, rock them day and night and do your absolute best to comfort them. And some of them are just like, oh my God, you know, just this dream baby that just sort of, you know, can't wake them up. They just love to sleep. And I just, and that's another thing. I think, oh my God, why didn't I have that baby? But, you know, I look at my boy now, he's such a character and he's so funny. I do just think he was sent to test me. And then my, you know, my second born, Vivian, I always say she's just like a little Tamagotchi. Feed her, keep her warm, you know. From the minute she could talk, it was like, night, night, mummy. And she just puts herself to sleep. And I, me and even now, me and my husband are like, oh my God, it's amazing. Like, did you just see that? She's fallen asleep. You know, we're so fascinated because, you know, that would have just been, it just never happened with my boy, you know, you had to go to great, great lengths to get him to fall asleep.
That's so nice, though, that you can appreciate that. Because if you hadn't had that experience first time around, then you would just think, well, this is just motherhood. Why are people complaining about how hard being a mum is? It's so easy.
It must be harder having it the other way around. In fact, my middle sister did. She had her easy one first. I mean, I say easy one, like none of them are actually easy, but easier one first. And then her second born was sent to test her. So she had her second born and I had Ford at the same time. So we were both kind of battling with these tricky babies at home at the same time, at least.
I have a theory that everyone has their golden parenting stage. So we're all naturally good at one bit of it. So I love babies and newborns. And I can't do toddlers. Toddlers do my nut. So Alison, what's yours?
I think mine is between the ages of 6 and 9. That's my golden, because they're fun. You can like go on fun days out with them. They don't have loads of tantrums. It's like they're fun to hang out with.
Siobhan.
Oh, so you might be surprised at mine, because I used to say after Ford, if I could just give birth to a 2-year-old and just skip the first 2 years, I think I would, because that is the bit I just find really hard. If it wasn't that I had a bit of a tricky baby, it was that I physically found it so hard with the recovery.
I suspect you'd have a physical recovery after giving birth to a 2-year-old.
Yeah, imagine. But I mean, as soon as they're walking like very steadily, I thought that for me is the fun bit. Both mine were not really, mine really did not have, they did not go through the terrible twos, neither of them. So, you know, just when you think you're having a hard time, you'll get given it back, I'm sure, in other areas. So that's what I think was my little blessing to come, was that we haven't had the terrible twos. I think my daughter might be a 3-nager though shortly. Oh. So maybe
don't say it, she might not.
Hopefully.
So you've got a summer of touring coming up. How does that, you've mentioned this briefly, but do the kids come with you? Do you leave them with Chris? How do you kind of do the family pop star juggle?
So generally they don't come with me. I consider it to be just too loud and a bit manic. And so last year I got it into my head that I really wanted to bring them to Glastonbury because it would be such an incredible experience. Thank God I didn't. It was mental. I don't know if you've heard about our performance there, but they had to shut the entire area down because it was so busy. People were like jumping over the fence and pushing through. And it was so, they had to try and project the sound so far out of the tent that, I mean, imagine how loud it was on stage. It was phenomenal. So I'm so pleased they weren't there, because it would have been a bit Mad Max for them. But they have been to one of our shows, and I'll definitely cherry pick a few things this summer that I think might be nice for them. Like, we're supporting Take That in Hyde Park. Like, that'll be really fun for them. But beyond that, no, I'll mum during the week, and then Chris takes over for the weekends. I think it's nicer for them, I think. And then they can carry on with all the birthday parties and all the other things that are going on.
So what can we expect from your shows this year? Is it mostly newer material, or do you throw in a few oldies as well?
It's a real mix. I'd say, to be honest, it's mostly back catalogue. Like, when you're doing the festivals, you don't want to test the audience too much music that they might not know as well. And they haven't bought the ticket for the festival necessarily just to see you. So, you know, you've got to be conscious that you're playing to a broader audience. But we are going to put one or two newer things in and start to mess around with the track list in a little bit. But we had such a, honestly, last year was so brilliant. I just hope that it's similar this year, because it's just such a lovely catalogue to play out. Like, it's so, like, everyone knows all the words and they sing along, and it's just extremely feel good, like, for us and the audience, I think.
So how does, if you've got Sugar Babes 2023 here and Sugar Babes 2000 here, how do they feel different?
I think what you just did with your hand there is actually really important, because I think 2000 Sugar Babes feels very heavy. It feels very weighted and very intense. And 2023 Sugar Babes feels the opposite. It feels light as air. It honestly feels like we're on cloud nine and just, like, really, I mean, honestly, just living our best lives. You know, it was for me, you know, with, you know, how my parenting journey went, it was such a welcome thing back into my world and at the right time. And I love the balance that I get. I'm at home most of the time, but I get to go off and do this amazing thing. And I think that that balance for me is what I need, for sure.
How does it work with what you're allowed to perform? Because obviously Sugar Babes went through quite a few different variations of, you know, of lineup after you'd left. But there are so many classic Sugar Babes songs that we know that you didn't perform on first time round. Are you allowed to perform them as Sugar Babes now?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the thing is, you can perform any song by any artist globally. But also, you know, the history of the Sugar Babes is a complicated one. And each subsequent member that came in, they would play out historical songs. And so it's kind of nothing new. I thought it was going to be weird for me. I wanted to embrace it for the fans, because I know they want to hear it. I wanted to embrace it for Mutya and Keisha, because it's important for them that they get to celebrate, you know, the legacy. But actually, the side effect for me has been that I've really enjoyed it. So I'm happy that I've been able to be that more sort of more lighthearted version of myself these days, that we can just kind of get on with it. Because, I mean, you know, it's kind of a waste of worry and energy, you know, trying to pick out which ones and which ones not. You know, I thought maybe we'd only do up until, you know, Mutya left, but Mutya is happy to do the songs later on as well. So we were just like, isn't it just easier if we open up the whole catalogue and just cherry pick and have a lovely time?
I just love how zen this all sounds. I want to be a Sugar Babe. Let's ignore the fact I can't sing for toffee, but it just sounds really good fun. I just love it.
I love it too.
We only allow people in our inner circle now to work with us if they are zen. They have to have totally like good intentions towards us, or we have no time for it. And I feel like we're kind of seasoned enough that we can see, you know, the good stuff from the bad. So yeah, we're trying to navigate it as best we can.
How important was it to you guys then to reclaim the Sugar Babes name after a few years of being known as MKS?
I never wanted us to be known as MKS or Mutya, Keisha, Siobhan. It never sat well with me, and I don't think it did with the other girls either. It was a legal thing where it was, it should have always have been ours. And I know sort of legally I can't say an awful lot about why we couldn't use it. But actually, legally, we were always able to use it. So it was this weird grey area that we had to try and navigate. And in the end, it did take a number of years, but we just pushed and were like, we could have just gone out and used it and like kind of seen what the backlash was, but we felt more comfortable if we just had the trademark and did it all properly. So then we could go out and just relax, which is what we've been able to do now. You know, it was decided when it came up for review, it was decided very quickly that of course it was for the three of us. And, you know, we're happy that that's the case. It just makes it too confusing for people. I think, you know, you could think it's a given that we've got such unusual names that, you know, when in combination, you know who it is. But actually, you know, like on a festival poster, it gets lost. You know, they just need to see Sugar Babes. So yeah, we're happy. It's much more streamlined.
Which noughties band, 90s noughties, they're all reuniting. Who do you want to see most? Who, if you could cherry pick one from back in the day, who would you have?
Oh, I'm trying to think.
Who would you have, Alison? I know who I'd have.
Oh, go on. Who would you have?
I'd have Oasis back together.
Do you know what? I'd love to see that.
Just because that's my teenage years, like dancing in the pub to Oasis. So I'd have Oasis.
See, a lot of the people that I loved back then were solo artists. It was the Mariahs and, you know, Monica and Brandy obviously sang together, but only for one song. I'm trying to think, there was loads of like R&B artists that I love. And then other people like SWV, I have to have a look because so many people are, you know, you don't realise are actually still touring. They might not be touring in the UK, but they're probably already back together, whoever I'm going to list. I'm looking forward to seeing Take That in the summer.
Yeah. Oh, you lucky bugger.
Yeah, it's going to be lovely. So that would
give
be
them
nice.
A stroke for me, a slightly seedy stroke in a kind of, ooh.
My husband's like obsessed with them. It's so funny. So he's so proud of me that we're supporting them.
No, it's brilliant.
That's a big gig. You've got to take the kids to that one, definitely.
I think so.
Listen, Siobhan, thank you so much for joining us today. It has been so nice to chat to you and hear all about your motherhood journey up to this point. Thank you so much.
Oh, thanks for having me on. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.